Okay, we'll resume our presentations with Kelly Orr, our controller. Kelly has been with Cameco for 20 years and will share with us some of his planning on the IFRS project. His team's been working on this for most of the last 2 years, he tells me. He'll have a look at the potential impact on our financial disclosures and how we plan to keep you up to date in the next 18 months as we head toward 2011. So I'll turn it over to Kelly.
Thank you for that introduction, Bob. As Bob mentioned, myself and my team have been working at this for the better part of a couple of years now, and we're getting closer to the finish line. Maybe I'll start by backing up to the first slide. Sorry. My objective here, my initial thinking with respect to the objective, was to try and make you, this audience, excited, energized, and enthusiastic about coming changes in accounting standards. However, my 20-plus years' experience as a professional accountant tells me that that sort of objective is unachievable. So what I will try to do is to provide an overview of our transition, touching on some highlights with respect to what's changing in the accounting world and what you might expect to see once those changes are in place. There will be very few details that I'll share with you here. It'll be pretty high level, and there will be few Cameco-specific details shared along the way as well. The topics that I would like to cover, first one, what is IFRS? Probably can't do that one justice, but I'll try to give you some general sense as to what that is and what it means. I'll talk about the timeline that we're on, what we're faced with over the next 18 months, as Bob described. We'll touch on some of the significant accounting and disclosure differences, look at some of the impacts on our financial disclosures. I guess I'll be able to describe some of what you can expect to see, and then spend a minute or two talking about what to expect once we've actually transitioned to this new IFRS world. So what is IFRS? Well, in a nutshell, I guess, it's a set of accounting standards set out by the International Accounting Standards Board, or the IASB. In effect, it's the international equivalent of Canadian GAAP or US GAAP. And the reason we're looking at it now is because our Canadian standard setters have decided that IFRS is the way to go moving forward. That decision is taken out of our hands, so we are going about the business of complying with meeting the transition requirements. Canada isn't the first country to undergo this in recent years. European entities and Australian companies also transitioned to IFRS. That was back in 2005. Looking ahead beyond the Canadian transition, U.S. standard setters have also declared that IFRS is the preferred set of accounting standards to follow there, and they will be coming into effect in the U.S. as of 2014. So that's 3 years after Canadian rules change. Our transition timeline. Now, the standards come into effect for fiscal 2011, and for Cameco that means our first financial reporting under IFRS will be the first quarter of 2011, or our report dated March 31st, 2011. As we all know, I'm sure, our financial statements include both a current year and a prior year as a comparative, so that means we'll have to begin keeping records under IFRS effective January 1st, 2010. So what we're doing in 2010 is an above-board keeping of two sets of records. Now, as we go through 2010, we will continue to report under Canadian GAAP, but once we turn over to 2011, we will change the comparative so that 2010 is reflecting or conforms to IFRS. To help our followers through that, we are required to provide a reconciliation of the financial results disclosed under IFRS to what was previously disclosed under Canadian GAAP. And the form that we'll take will be a rather extensive note to our financial statements, which outlines and quantifies the various differences. And at this point, I am guessing a little bit, but that type of note could be 2 or 3 pages long. Now, transitional considerations. Generally speaking, when you adopt IFRS, there is a presumption that your financial statements will present your results as though you had always been applying international financial standards, which, taken to extreme, could mean that you go back to the dawn of time for your particular entity and recast all of your financial results. Clearly, that would be an onerous task to undertake, and fortunately, the standard setters see it to that in that light to some extent as well, and have provided some transitional facility, I guess, to help companies adopt for the first time. And in doing so, they have set out IFRS 1, which provides, again, guidance for first-time adoption of IFRS. And the gist of that standard really is a list of exemptions that companies can take to make their lives easier in terms of the transition. There are a few mandatory exemptions, and there are several optional exemptions. Some of the options that a company has is with respect to the valuation of its property, plant, and equipment. You have the option of carrying forward with your historic records or starting off your IFRS reporting with fair values, which would require an entity to get independent evidence of the value of certain assets, which could require an appraisal or an extensive discounted cash flow value and use analysis. Another of the optional exemptions relates to business combinations, and what the option is in that light is to pick a date before which you do not have to go back and revisit any of your business combinations. So a company can move that date anywhere from January 2010 back to the beginning of its time. Most companies will elect something close to January 2010 so they don't have to go about the process of revisiting their purchases and their purchase price allocations and changing their accounting. But that will be looked at on a case-by-case basis, I'm sure. In addition to these transitional considerations, I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, but there are many, many accounting policy changes and choices to be made. We are in the process of analyzing and documenting those choices. They have not formally been blessed, I suppose, by our governance structure, so we're not at liberty today to speak to those. Under IFRS, there are several key accounting differences. You can put them into two categories, small and larger, and there are dozens of small differences. What I have heard in the various courses I've gone to in this area is that the devil is in the details. I don't particularly like that phrase, but nonetheless, I'm living it now, as are several members of my team. So there are dozens of small differences in the accounting literature. There are also a few larger differences, and I'll take a moment or two to talk about some of those. The first one I have listed here is with respect to joint venture accounting, and the big difference there is related to proportionate consolidation. And under IFRS, we will no longer be able to apply proportionate consolidation to our jointly controlled entities. Specifically for Cameco, that means our investment in Bruce Power. We will revert to the application of the equity method or one-line accounting, so we won't be reflecting our proportion of their revenues in our revenue line, as an example. Now, we won't be leaving people totally in the dark with respect to how our operations are performing at Bruce. In our note disclosure, we will have summary-level financials for Bruce and relevant discussion, description of the financial results there also. Essentially, I hope we'll be able to replicate the same information in total. It'll just be in a different form. The second item I have listed here is property, plant, and equipment. there will be a significant expansion in the note disclosure provided for our property, plant, and equipment. It will take the form of a continuity schedule, I would say, where we reflect acquisitions, dispositions, any write-downs, accumulated depreciation throughout the year. Under IFRS, we're also required to break our assets down into significant components. And the typical example we throw out is, say, a mining haul truck. So traditionally in the mining industry, a haul truck would be considered one asset and depreciated over one life. Under IFRS, you're required to look at these things and take them down into smaller pieces if it makes sense to do so. So in the example of the haul truck, a company might decide that the tires are a separate asset with a separate life, or the engine maybe as well. So you could be factoring that particular asset down into 3, 4, 5, 6 different pieces. Moving on to the next item, our asset retirement obligations, or our decommissioning estimates. Under our Canadian reporting requirements, we make adjustments to that really only when there are changes in our legal obligations. Under international standards, we may be required to include constructive obligations in those liabilities. And really, a constructive obligation is a promise made by the company that may not be legally enforceable, but if the company has a history of and an intention to follow through on those obligations, it would be something that would have to be recorded at the time the obligation was made. And the last item I have listed here is asset impairment. And there is a big difference in the accounting standards in this area. Under Canadian rules right now, assets are tested for impairment on the basis of an undiscounted cash flow test, which means that if your future net cash flows to be generated from a particular asset exceed its current carrying value, there's no impairment. Under IFRS, we're required to discount those expected future cash flows, which will invariably yield a smaller number and increase the likelihood of recognizing impairment going forward. Another important piece to that is, under Canadian standards, we're currently required to, once we recognize an impairment, we keep it forever. We don't review it again. Under international standards, if economic circumstances improve to the point where the carrying value of that asset could improve, you might reverse all or a portion of your impairment. And that will introduce some volatility into the reported earnings for many companies, I'm sure. What will it look like? That would be a question better answered with an example. A physical example, but I can only describe what it might look like. Our financial statements will undergo a facelift. That'll be minor tweaking, not major reconstructive surgery. You will still recognize the balance sheet, income statement, and the cash flow statement, although they will take slightly different forms. One area that will change significantly will be our notes to the financial statements. They will become extensive. They will include far more detail and be broader in scope. And I've made a note here that our page count could increase by up to 100%. That there are many companies out there, mining and other, whose annual financial statements, their page count exceeds 100, which is quite different than our now concise or not so concise 50 pages. So that is something to look forward to, and people with an appetite for detail will like it. Others may not. I've listed here some of the things and means by which we'll be communicating future changes as we push forward to the date of cutover to IFRS. We have been, for the past 2 years, providing updates in our quarterly financials and our MD&A. The next real significant update will be with our annual filings for 2009, and I'm not suggesting you ignore our third quarter report. But 2009 is really the point in time where we will expand our disclosure around this International Financial Reporting Standard objective. And the big disclosure at that point in time will be description of the policy changes that we have identified and will be implementing. That description will be narrative. It will not be quantitative at that point. Moving beyond transition in 2011, first comment here is change is constant. And what I mean by that is that there are several standards that are under review and that are almost certain to be changing once Canadian companies cut over to IFRS. There is, I think, a U.S. influence in this. There are many joint projects between the international standard setters and the U.S. standard setters, so there's a good chance that this will end up with something of a U.S. flavor, I'll say. Some of the areas that are going to be looked at and are likely to change will include income taxes, revenue recognition, post-employment benefits, hedge accounting. There are several others. And I guess I'll wrap this up with a few key messages. The potential is there for significant change in our financial statements and our notes. More voluminous disclosure is all but guaranteed. And the last thought I would like to leave you with is just with respect to future communications by the company, I would encourage you to follow that. Try to digest what we're providing and provide feedback with respect to whether it is suiting your needs.